This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Live from New York, the show that hasn't seen an eclipse since Brew was in fifth grade.
That's what he said. And what was his reasoning for
it? I was exaggerating.
I've been working. He said. Too busy.
You guys were kids when I started working. That's true.
Yeah.
I don't even know if Nick was
born. What does that have to do with this? Looking just glance at the sky.
Give it a look.
You see one eclipse, you kind of seen them all. I mean, that's the truth.
Today, is there drama in Dallas? And is there a snowball's chance that the Cowboys trade Micah Parsons? It's exactly what I had written here. What? Meanwhile, Bronny declares for the draft. What does this mean for the James family and the Lakers family? And finally, it's Monday Mock Draft 2.0. Does that mean better? We're not sure.
Just means new.
Another fresh and updated edition of Nick's draft predictions alongside Chris Broussard, who hasn't seen an eclipse.
I'm about to go during the break.
45 years, I told
you. Guys are telling me it's so great.
It's nice.
Okay.
It's Nick, right? Yeah. Nick, your take on the eclipse and your mock draft.
Oh, I mean, you're going to see a once-in-a-lifetime thing today and the eclipse.
Okay. So good. Because next Monday it's 3.0.
Exactly right.
We start with South Carolina, Iowa. Dawn Staley's squad take home the championship. Caitlin Clark ends her career with 38-5 in the loss. Here's Caitlin after the game.
The emotions will probably hit me over the next couple days, and I don't have much time to, you know, sit around and sulk and be upset, and I don't think that's what I'm about either, is, you know, yeah, I'm sad we lost this game, but I'm also so proud of myself. I'm so proud of my teammates. I'm so proud of this program. The biggest thing is, you know, it's really hard to win these things. I think I probably know that better than most people by now, and to be so close twice, it definitely hurts. But at the same time, like, you know, we were right there. We battled.
Back-to-back 30-point championship games. Brew, without a championship, is Caitlin Clark still in the GOAT conversation?
She's on the periphery. She's on the periphery because of what she's accomplished. The impact on the game. But she's not the GOAT. It's only fair. All right? It's only fair. And when we have quarterback in the NFL, college male player, NBA player, rings come into play. You're not in the conversation without a ring. Mm-hmm. Dan Marino, some say the best they've ever seen sling. Way ahead of his time.
Yeah.
No ring. As good, as much respect as we give Marino, we kind of scoff at the notion of could he be the GOAT. Even Aaron Rodgers with just one ring, we say not written, he can't be in the conversation. True. So I don't, she's not the GOAT. I got to be fair with what we usually judge by. Now, I've said last week she's the best I've ever seen. I'm not so watching all the players.
Of course.
But some people would say Marino was the best they ever saw. But again, I think your accomplishments have to support a GOAT argument. I say Patrick Mahomes. We all say he's the best I've ever seen. But I would say not yet. He's not the GOAT just yet. So, and I also think this. There are so many players in women's basketball that have won 2, 3, or even 4 rings. And some, a lot of them obviously went to UConn and Tennessee, and some would say, well, yeah, they went to these powerhouses.
Yeah.
But you also could look at it like they also sacrificed individual stats. Well, now, had they gone to a school where they were the show – They could have put up big numbers. So there's no one from UConn in the top 10 in scoring. Maya Moore is 11. Shamika Holzhauer from Tennessee is 12. There's no one from Tennessee in the top 10. So I can't put her. She can be in the conversation because of the impact, but she's not the GOAT.
Okay, so that last point you made, I actually totally agree with, which is there's a trade-off in everything in life. Is sports and accomplishments and GOAT talk included, which is had she been on a better team, she almost assuredly would not have all these same records.
Right.
You know what I mean? There, because she wouldn't have been the entirety of the offense, all of it. But I also think because it is a team game and the context of everyone's context is different. Like, it is easy to make the argument, well, it's Breanna Stewart, guys. She has four titles, three players of the year, and her last 3 years at UConn, they were 116-1. What more would you like?
Well, and 117,
then, though. Right, but then, so they were her last 3 years, they were 116-1. But then you get the context of, oh, so what happened to them after she left? The very next year that they left, UConn was 36-0, headed to the Final Four, and lost in overtime. The year after that, they were 36-0, headed to the Final Four, and lost in overtime. So even without her, those two teams went 72-2. So that is the context of it, which is why, to me, there is an eye test element of this, because I agree with you on pro sports, Brew, that if you are ringless in a career, that seems like how could you be the best?
But when you think about the best college player ever,
the men's side, it's easy. I don't think there is a definitive answer on the women's side. I don't. Cheryl Miller is the one I've always said because I'll be totally honest. Because I was told.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because every people, it's hard to go back and research women's basketball in the 80s. Right. But you made the great point that someone else in that discussion was her teammate on those teams at USC
Cooper,
and Cynthia Cooper.
The McGee sisters.
So to me, I would like to just do a thought exercise for a moment, because the only reason South Carolina is not the three-time defending national champions on a wooden Bruins-esque 82-game winning streak right now is because she beat them.
Well,
so no,
maybe.
What do you mean?
Because they
would have had to beat LSU. That's fair.
Yeah,
okay, that's true because that wasn't the championship game. Point I'm making is, in a weird way, I think her beating South Carolina last year hurt her standing in some people's eyes in the GOAT argument. Because if it was just no one could win a title, there was this juggernaut program that won 80 straight games, that won three straight championships, that did all this stuff. And she, you know where her season ended? When she played them, you know, each year. But instead, she beat them once, and then they didn't have enough left in the tank to beat LSU. The other question I would have for you guys is this. And at what point, I know you guys didn't like my if someone averaged 60 a game question. I understand that. But this is not a hyperbole. This is I think it's real if you guys agree with it. The only player on Iowa that would be in the rotation for South Carolina, that would have been on the court for them yesterday, was Caitlin Clark. So at some point,
that's not definitive, but you can
having watched the game, you know what I mean? Again, having watched the game, watched the tournament, that's what I feel. And so I guess my point is I'm not sitting here saying she's the greatest college women's player ever, because I don't feel that I am educated enough on the history to know that.
I feel similar.
But I've been watching it pretty closely since Shamika Holzhauer, since I was a little kid and went to the Final Four in Kansas City. I was like, this is dope. And so Kathy Jolly and that Shamika Holzhauer team, all the UConn teams, I can't say that I think Tarazi was better than her. I can't say that I think Breanna Stewart was better than her. I've watched it, and I can't say that I think anyone that I've seen is better than her.
No, I think that's fair. Here's the other thing, though. Cheryl Swoops, who obviously is an all-time great, she did go to a program that wasn't Tennessee or Connecticut. She went to Texas Tech, led them to a championship. So I just think, and for me, being consistent, being fair with how I do men, I can't say she's a GOAT.
She could
be in the discussion.
NBA draft, WNBA draft is next week. Caitlin's going to go number one to Indiana Fever. Diana Taurasi was on with Van Pelt and kind of predicted what she was going to do next. Okay. And her quote is, look, SV, SVP, Van Pelt. Reality is coming. There's levels to this thing. That's just life. We all went through it. You know, you look superhuman against 18-year-olds, but now you're playing against grown women. And the Phoenix Mercury are already sort of touting this matchup, Tarazi versus Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin cooked by Caitlin Clark. Maybe not prime Tarazi wouldn't.
But Tarazi's 41 years old, so
which
maybe.
She's definitely going to get cooked. Can I say something about this? I have massive respect. Massive. Like, Tarazi, I saw a lot of people were talking Maya Moore, and Brittany Griner's name came up. Prior to Caitlin Clark, Diana Taurasi was the best women's basketball player I've ever seen. She doesn't have the numbers, Breonna Stewart or Maya Moore. To me, she was the best I had ever
seen. Great.
Her career's unbelievable. I really like Sue Bird, and I think what their telecast is awesome. They were doing some not so low key hating on Caitlin Clark.
Well, there's been a lot of
right, but this was a UConn thing. This was a Paige Beckers should be getting this moment. Caitlin's getting it, and you saw it. And I know you're like, again, you can have respect for the athlete and the player, and then also recognize some of the commentary I think is colored by their own school affiliation. And I don't know what you think, Brew. I do not think Caitlin Clark's going to go to the WNBA next year and struggle.
No, I think she's going to eat it up.
Yes.
I think she's going to go crazy in that league.
And
she, like I said last week, she is the best I've seen, but I can't give her the GOAT status.
Okay. I'm not sure that, and I see some people like, if you're, I think it was LeBron. It's like, if you're hate, I mean, there's a certain amount of, if you're hating on Caitlin Clark, that is out of bounds, and obviously there's no place for it. If you are saying Paige is better than Caitlin Clark and we're going to ride with our UConn Huskies and she's going to come
into
the WNBA and I can't wait and we're putting ads out, I think that's doing, that is exactly what women's basketball and WNBA needs.
Hold on, to be clear, like somebody said, oh man, women's basketball has now got to the point to where it's all a GOAT debate. And like, and we're doing it obviously
it
now. Can I just say something that's actually, that once your once your sport has graduated to the silliest conversations, it actually means it is crossed over.
You are right. That'll be great for the
league. And I just want to, because maybe I said it weird.
Well, I need to defend you.
So I want to make it clear. I don't think what Diana said was out of bounds. I think it was a sports take.
Yeah,
and you know what's also in bounds? Me saying that's a bad take.
Oh,
right. You know what I mean? I think that Paige is better than Caitlin, and that Caitlin's not going to walk into the WNBA and immediately be one of the 20 best players in that league.
20?
I hope so. I think she'll be better than 20. I think she'll be one of the top 10.
I do too, but their commentary was she's about to be playing with grown women and she's going to struggle. And I'm saying I disagree. I think that is a fair take, but a bad take.
Yeah, that's all. She's
maybe
get
a
busy.
Little Wembanyama-esque, like start off a little slow and then get it halfway through the year.
I think she's going to play tremendous.
I think she's going to immediately be one of the best players in the league.
I do too.
All right, be good. Yeah. Dawn Staley wins her third championship in 7 years, undefeated season. She's 109-3 in her last three seasons. Let's take a look at her resume. Win percentage, 901. Finals 4-6, national titles 3. So what's next? Scott Fowler of the Charlotte Observer says Staley's next challenge should be coaching the Charlotte Hornets. Actually seems like a bit of a punishment, but it's an interesting idea. Nick, your reaction.
All right, I've had the pleasure of being able to meet and talk with Dawn Staley a couple times in my life. She's like one of those people that, at least for me, you're almost makes you nervous being around. Like, you don't want to, like, you want to impress them. Like, she just carries a real presence. Like, this is the first time I met you, bro. Like, but I just want to give, she took over in 09 and they were 10-18 her first year. Mm. They didn't win their first SEC championship for 5 years in 2014. And, man, once she got it rolling, 2015, she makes her first Final Four, 2017, the national championship. 2020, they would have won it, I believe. The pandemic canceled the tournament. They were, I think, 32-1, and they don't get a tournament. You know what I mean? And now she could have won three in a row and has won two of the last three, which is to say everything else she does at South Carolina is gravy. And I understand people saying the Charlotte Hornets should do it. I wonder why the University of Kentucky wouldn't call but on the men's side of things. So that is a program where Patino won, Tubby won, Coach Cal won, and I look at the NBA and some of the best coaching jobs. I think she could do it because people are like, are people going to listen? to, you know, a woman telling them how to, like, I don't think the Timberwolves are like Chris Finch really got down at his D3 basketball or Dagenham.
Not a D3 my, catch.
Our friend of the right, our friend yeah. of the show, Danny Parkins, just wrote a book, Pipeline to the Pros, about how so many of the guys that are head coaches or GMs were D3 basketball players. I bet a lot of men's players respect her playing career more than somebody that played, you know what I mean, like Jeff Van Gundy's playing career or things like that. So I think she could do it. I just think her ability to relate to young people and the recruiting and the molding is so special on the collegiate level that I would think the next challenge might be go get Kentucky back to glory rather than the hamster wheel that is the NBA, which is like, how can you succeed in Charlotte? Like, Michael Jordan tore that thing down so poorly and left the cupboard so bare.
We're done with the GOAT
debate. I'm just saying. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
No, look, I like the Kentucky idea. I think that makes some sense. And a lot of people, like you said, whether it's the NBA or men's college players may say, well, will they listen to a woman? Will they let her be an authority? Look, in the NBA, their last two CEOs of the Players Association, which the players choose, have been women.
Oh, yeah.
So they're showing that they will listen to the authority of a woman. So if I'm either of these, I'm not just giving her the job, but I would love to talk to her if I'm them. So let me go to Charlotte. Definitely, I will put her on the list and talk to her. But I don't think, look, most guys that have come from college to coach the NBA have not succeeded. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about guys that won. Calipari, Rick Pitino, Jerry Tarkanian. Yep. You know, you can go, and then there's other, those
Brad,
are the ones
Brad
that
Stevens
have won one champion. Who?
Brad Stevens won.
Brad Stevens
okay,
did a good
yeah,
job.
He,
and Billy
he
Donovan,
did a good job.
Okay.
Billy Donovan,
yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But
no,
they haven't won a championship.
But most haven't. I mean, we could Mike Montgomery and you know, Lon Kruger and guys like. So it's a tough jump. So if I were the Hornets, I might put her on the list. But, no, I'm not, like, just giving her the job. I think that's crazy. So Kentucky is a good situation for her.
But I don't like either of them.
You just want her to stay?
I want her to stay. I think what makes college sports interesting is the churn of players and the consistency of coaches and
and
programs, right? So it's like Calhoun has been at UConn for 39 years. So it's like Geno's been at
Calhoun was there.
Calhoun has also been there.
Yeah.
Sorry, Geno's been there for 39 years. So I like the idea of her just being the anchor of South Carolina. They're always there. The players, she had new starting five
this
year.
And, I mean, it's not going to, like, what we have seen particularly in the women's game is you can have a decade-plus run of running it. You know what I mean?
Oh,
Pat Summitt ran the game for my entire youth.
To Geno.
Right, and then Geno ran it on a level even higher than Pat did for the better part of 15 years. Yep. And now she appears to be at the beginning of that to where it could keep going. That's
right.
For sure.
No, now we'll talk about UConn. Purdue versus UConn, me versus Dusty tonight.
Start to think Jim Calhoun, system coach. Everybody wins at UConn. System coach.
Huskies are 6.5-point favorite over Dusty's Boilermakers. Brew, what are the chances that Purdue pulls off the upset?
I got to say this first, though. I mean, and we talked. Dusty is so melancholy.
Leave him alone.
I see no
confidence. He's so nervous,
guys. I see no confidence whatsoever.
Dusty's our big Purdue fan.
Oh, my gosh. It's sad. But anyway, I give him a 25 to 30% chance.
Wow. 25 to 30.
Yeah, which I think
27.5.
Yeah, about that. Okay. Now, I think the key is their formula is they got the big man, obviously, Zach Edey, inside, and they shoot it well from three. They're one of two teams in the nation that shot 40% from three. So, obviously, the key is Edey's got to punish them inside to the point where you have to double him, and then they got to hit those threes. Now, that's the thing, because they got Klingon with UConn, who's 7'2". So, he should at least be able to match up somewhat with Edey. So, I think it's going to be a challenge, but if Edey can play well inside and they can hit their threes at a high level, then
like
I'll give them a shot.
50% maybe.
I mean, look, I've seen stranger things happen.
Yeah, but and this is also – this is dope because it's pretty rare, actually, especially in the last 20 years of college basketball to get the pretty clear-cut two best teams throughout the year to be able to play in the Final Four. I mean, if people watch this show regularly, whenever we would do our college basketball promos, like back in November or December, Wilds would be joking but serious about UConn or Purdue kind of toggling that 1 and 2 rating back and forth. Mm-hmm. And it is a cool matchup because it will give young people a bit of an idea of what professional basketball used to look like.
Yeah, I like it.
You know, where the focal point is a dominant big man is what I mean. You know what I mean? To where it's not exactly a perfect comp, but it's just
they play through
a 7-footer that they're going to live or die with. I am curious what UConn is going to, how they're going to react to their big guy not being the biggest guy on the court for the only game they've played like that all year. And I want Purdue to win because I want Dusty to be happy and I want Wilds to feel pain. But I also can't get past this. UConn's not just 11-0 in their last 11 tournament games.
Yeah.
They have covered 11 straight spreads.
Oh, you love that.
Well, it's impossible, and the fact that I have not made a dollar off it is just maddening. In fact, I think I bet against them a couple times last year.
Why did you do that?
Last year. You've been saying all year that no one can come close to UConn.
Yes.
And I'm rooting against you, but I think you're right.
So we think Zach Edey's going to get his. I think it's going to be very similar to what we just saw with Iowa. Like, you have one star player. Mm-hmm. They're going to get theirs. But maybe if we can slow down everybody else, you're going to have a hard time really ratcheting it up. I have two things. One, do you remember LeVar Ball?
Yeah, I do.
Do we remember?
Remember LeVar Ball?
Wasn't that long ago.
He said something famous. He said, never lost.
Yeah.
Remember that? Mm-hmm. Five and oh. Well, UConn's 5-0 in championship games. So this will be our sixth title.
That's impressive.
And then this tournament, UConn's starting five. So who do you want to stop here? If your game plan is, who do you want? Like, you know what?
I mean, Kling.
Let's put the brakes. Okay.
They want to get Kling in foul trouble.
But
that's the idea.
Everybody scores.
No, I
and Castle's the best NBA prospect.
Yes.
No, but they. But don't you think?
New one's going to go.
Don't you think that the recipe for Purdue is this? Is that we are nearing the under 12 timeout and Kling picks up his second foul.
So lame. That's on the board. It's definitely on the board.
I'm not saying I'm saying if you're Purdue, even if there are some empty possessions early, I think the goal has to be to not only play through Edey, but drive at Klingon and see if you, because he's going to be under so much pressure to defend Edey.
Yeah.
And then if all of a sudden he has to defend softer, that's when Edey can really take advantage. Like, that's just what I think. Because UConn is clearly the better team. It's
odd refereeing assignment. Like, you got to think, like, two big guys, like, let them play a little bit.
I agree. I agree.
Don't let UConn get... The refs decide another UConn game. Don't get me started. John Calipari leaving Kentucky, finalizing a 5-year deal with the Razorbacks. Coach Cal, 15 years at UK, went from great to good. First 6 years, 4 Final Fours and a 2012 championship with AD. Last 9 years, no Final Fours and losses to Oakland and St. Peter's. Brew, your reaction?
Well, I was one of those that thought Cal should have got fired after this year's tournament. And I think this works out for all three parties, for Cal, for Kentucky, and for Arkansas. For Cal, even though they brought him back, it was going to be ugly with those fans. It was ugly last year. It was toxic there last year with the fans and Cal. And this year would have been even worse. So he needed to get out of that situation. All right. The only reason they kept him, I think, was because he had $33 million left if they fired him. So for Kentucky, you get to get rid of him, which they probably wanted to do, and then you're not on the hook for that money. And for Arkansas, which has still been a good – Eric Musselman did a good job there. This year they struggled, but for the most part, he did a good job. But – Cal is just on a different level from Musselman in terms of college basketball. And so I think he brings a panache. He probably bring the type of recruits they haven't had in mass since Nolan Richardson was there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like NBA caliber, you know, players in the future.
Corliss Williams and so, walking through that.
Scotty Thurman, whatever. Yeah. I think this takes him to another level, gives him a shot in the arm. And so I like it for all three.
Classic two for Colin Cowherd.
Oh, I don't know.
He's
you're
been
out
on.
Classic twos
hey, well, for my dear friend and mentor Cowherd, I'll give him one. I mean, he's been on the Calipari anti-Calipari corner for as long as I've been listening to him. And the fact of the matter is this. He underachieved at Kentucky.
No doubt.
Patino had a six-year run. One title, three Final Fours, five Elite Eights in 6 years. Tubby Smith had an eight-year run, and they didn't like him. Won a championship, made a Final Four, made four Elite Eights. Cal was awesome for 10 years and underachieved in those. One championship, four Final Fours, seven Elite Eights, just the one ring. And the 5 years since then, they haven't even been to the Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. And so all the naysayers that were like, great recruiter, not a great tactician, all that stuff. And I like Cal, and I've always kind of defended him. But it's an ignominious end. And if he doesn't get Arkansas back, like, to where it was with Nolan Richardson, it's going to be like, wait, John Calipari ended his career where? It's going to feel weird.
Yeah, he'll come back around.
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
He's getting older.
It'll be like a Patino thing. Are the Cowboys out on Micah?
Oh.
Next on FS1 on the Fox Sports Channel, Sirius XM. Bruce going to give out another grade? No?
Am I?
I don't know.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, welcome back to the Electric Show. Drama in Dallas, question mark? Report from Sean Sharif that Micah has, quote, worn thin with the Cowboys. Trayvon Diggs responding with some tweets. Who said that? And that's weird. Shaking my head. Brew, is Micah part of the problem or the solution in Dallas?
Wiles, all I got to say is this, or the first thing I have to say is I am so glad that unlike some people on this set, I did not pick the Cowboys to win the NFC East. I am so glad, because it's already started.
Oh, okay.
Now, Micah is not a part of the problem. He is the solution.
Oh, okay, we agree there. So why you got to take shots at me?
Well, I'm just saying, they're a mess. Why is this happening?
I got lost on that.
No, but Nick's been singing the Cowboys praises.
Are you bad?
He said the NFC East. Yeah, it's just that I don't believe in the Eagles because I don't believe in, what do you call it, an existential funk or something?
So supernatural.
Supernatural, sorry.
I mean, Micah, and you guys know, I'm not that big of a fan of him doing, it's a great podcast, but
is it?
I think it's fun for us. We get a ton of ammunition from it. It's not the greatest thing for the team, sure. I don't think. A young guy who hasn't won yet, who's still building. It's not like he's Draymond Green, who's won rings and played his best basketball.
That's a good
podcast. All right, so, even Paul George, who hadn't won, but he's a veteran at least.
These things.
And so I don't think that's great. But Micah, what is he? Other than that, there's no problem. He doesn't have any character issues. He's not in the police blotter and things like
that's
that.
That's exactly right.
You know what I mean? Like, I think you saw this is going way back when Dez Bryant was up for his contract. You little stuff like this come out with Dak. Little stuff like this comes out. I think this is the Cowboys trying to get some leverage to maybe get the price down.
Oh.
And the fact that it's coming from a guy that interviews Jerry Jones every week on his radio show, 105.3, just is going to lend credibility to the report for Micah and for Trayvon Diggs and other Cowboys. They're going to be like, he talks to Jerry every week, so he must know he's
and I don't think Sean would say, I don't want to speak for him, but that this came from Jerry, but he's connected to the team.
Somebody's
he's been doing
right.
radio in Dallas for a dozen years, Sean Sharif. And so I do believe his reporting. I think it is nonsense, though. Does that make sense? Like, I think what he's – I believe that he is –
Someone said it, but they're wrong.
But I think that this is – the reason pro football teams have these giant staffs of coaches and support people are to help the actual valuable employees stay in the guardrails and make sure everything's all good.
Yep.
Because whenever you – in any field where you deal with – 20-something-year-old celebrity millionaires with wild talent, they might have some eccentricities that you have to manage. That's fine. That's part of the deal. Micah Parsons is the same age as Bo Nix, who's going to be coming into the draft this year. He's 24-year-old, best player on your team. And I agree with Brew entirely. Like, that he, on the podcast, it's kind of weird because you can argue doing the podcast shows not great judgment, but when he does the podcast, he has shown amazing judgment because he does it every week during the season solo, and he has said nothing.
Right.
That's right. A big problem.
Right.
Yeah, trust me, we would have found it. We listened to that thing like damn congressional record. And so I think sometimes I agree with Brew. The Cowboys do have an organizational reputation for, you know, negotiating through the media, and I don't know if that's what this is or not, but then when we now get to this next story, who's their second best player, who doesn't have his contract yet, it kind of leads me to agreeing with Brew almost entirely.
Just to kind of, this is a cop-out answer of both. Micah did on the podcast when he was with CeeDee Lamb say that he needs to have more accountability. He lets things slide too often because we know we're good. That's about me. I want to change the culture. So,
but that's
fine, and I think he's saying that as a player.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But overall, I mean, look, when they were winning championships, we know there were issues with that team.
But to me, has Warren Thin is like, to me, that brings to mind, like, Stephon Diggs stuff. You know what I mean? Like, oh, my God, this guy is just a pain in the ass in the building. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to take a shot at Stephon, but that's clearly how the Bills felt about him. That's why they traded him. And I just don't get – I've never gotten that vibe or seen that, you know, like, here's the bad thing Micah Parsons did. I've never seen it.
If they got rid of him, which we know they won't, they're probably not even a playoff team.
Well, yeah, he's the best player on their team.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, on the offensive side of the ball, there's a report – that there might be a holdout looming for CeeDee Lamb. The dynamic wide receiver is on the final year of his rookie deal and may miss the voluntary spring workout, which by literal definition is voluntary. Cowboys social media team doing their part, however, saying, hey, happy birthday. Is this a sign, the holdout looming, not necessarily the social media post, that the Cowboys are in trouble?
Well, here's where I think the Cowboys are in trouble. I have argued that they are a well-run team in regards to their drafting. I think that they are. I think they're good drafters, and I think that they are judicious in not splurging in free agency in ways that can really damage your team. Like, people look at why the Chargers had to do a little teardown and why the Bills had to do a little teardown. You can kind of pinpoint impulsive free agent decisions, like J.C. Jackson trading for Khalil Mack or the Von Miller deal. So the Cowboys have been good by not doing it. So in that regards, I think they're well run. Where I think they are poorly run is not recognizing these are the guys we are going to have to pay. Paying them earlier is always better. The only guy they have paid early is the one guy they shouldn't have in Ezekiel Elliott, because it's a position that you don't want to pay at all. But they waited as long as they could to pay Dak, ended up paying him anyway, and that's what has now put them in this position where they can't tag him, they can't trade him, he has a massive cap hit. They could have paid CeeDee a year ago. Mm-hmm. They didn't. Fine. Yeah. I think their argument would be, well, Justin Jefferson didn't even get paid, same draft class a year ago, so we'll wait. I'm telling you right now, though, Dallas, the price will, if you don't sign him before Brandon Ayuk signs, the price goes up, because he's got to make more than Brandon Ayuk. And if you don't sign him before Justin Jefferson signs, the price goes up, even though it won't be higher than Justin Jefferson, because he'll say, okay, I want, you know, this much less than Justin Jefferson. You're going to sign him. So, like, this is, I don't know what the weight is. I know why T. Higgins, same draft class, isn't signed, because they're going to have to sign Ja'Marr Chase, and they might not want to. You know what I mean? As good as T. Higgins is. You're going to sign him. The longer you wait, the more it costs you. That, to me, is an organizational mistake that they have consistently made.
And I agree with that, and I think it'd be smart for CD to hold out. Because, like you said, they're going to cave. Is Zeke held out? And ultimately, Jerry caved. Go way back to Emmitt Smith. Mm. He caved. You know, so I think, look, the voluntary workout,
that's
no need to go to that.
Yeah,
don't, you know, risk injury. I mean, not that you're going to get hurt there, but don't risk that. And then if training camp starts and you don't have a deal, sit out. Because they absolutely, just like they need Micah, they absolutely need CD. Sure. And you're not going to be able to get a great read on Dak, theoretically, if CD's not there. So he's going to get signed, and if he holds out, he'll get more.
Okay, coming up after the break, is Nick officially changing his, and is it a finals pick?
Yeah. It's embarrassing, whatever.
And Brew requested an olive branch as big as a tree.
I want an olive tree out here. I'm gonna throw him a lifeline.
Check in on the Bucks, who lost again, this time to the Knicks by 14. Despite being under 500 with Doc, Giannis says they are not a losing team, but frustration is starting to take its toll on the Bucks, even off the court. Take a listen.
When you go back home, you cannot sit down and watch Amazon Prime and be relaxed and, you know, enjoy your steak and, I don't know, some guys drink your wine or your beer, whatever they drink, I don't know. Or for my case, do my Legos. Now, when I try to put my Legos in place, I'm like more frustrated, you know, I'm like, you know, hurting my fingers.
Locked in. Nick, do you officially want to change your pick? Oh, bro.
Okay. Can I ask you guys a question?
Yo, do not try it. Look.
You asked me. Now let me go, please.
I know, but
you did your whole weird and wonderful the tap dancing. Let me go, please. Did Giannis seem concerned?
No.
Or did Giannis almost seem oddly calm and serene about what's happening? Because I know what you're thinking. What you're thinking is, since we've last talked about the Bucks, they lost to Toronto. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, Dame didn't play in that game. And then they just lost to the Knicks with Giannis and Dame playing. And so this is four straight losses. Three awful losses, and then the Knicks game is, Knicks are a good team, but they didn't play well in that Knicks game, they being Milwaukee. So how can you possibly believe in them? And the answer is you can't, unless, of course.
Don't say it.
This is part of a plan.
This is so weak.
Okay, well,
let me just.
I got to hear this.
Okay. I don't know if you, Brew, have been locked into the Philadelphia 76ers, but I have been. They look awful scary.
Yeah.
They just got a great win without Embiid. Embiid's playing great. And I don't know how closely you've been looking at the standings, but the Sixers are not going to be able to climb out of that play-in spot. They're going to be the 7. They're going to win that play-in game and end up staying the 7. So if you're Milwaukee, I'm just curious. I don't know. Would you rather be the 2?
I mean,
or would you rather fall
so lame to
the 3 line because the NBA has not adopted pick your own opponent at playoffs? And because of that, they are incentivized to lose, get the Pacers in round 1. So, of course, I'd be a fool not to take your olive branch if I thought this was the real Milwaukee Bucks. But instead, they are doing the smart thing, which is ducking Philly in round 1.
Are you buying
ducking
this?
Ducking Philly in round 1.
I kind of buy it.
Yeah. Why would you want Philly in round 1?
Okay, that's
I'm going to give Doc Call Rivers, Giannis, Dame more credit than that. They are not cowards.
You can't
control it anyway.
What do you mean?
You don't know where you're going to end up.
You do.
No.
You lose and you fall.
What's to stop Cleveland or Orlando or any of the Knicks, any of these teams for thinking that?
You play Orlando twice. You
so Orlando could think the same thing and we'll lose.
Orlando's young and dumb.
No.
They're just going to win. You're like, look at us for a 2 seed.
You play who's in front. In fact, honestly, look, I agree that Philly's dangerous.
Dangerous.
And if Philly gets Milwaukee in round 1, right now, I'm taking the 6.
Yeah, agreed. Right? That's why you got to get away from.
But don't you think the best time to play the Sixers, if you have to face them, would probably be early?
No.
Because you don't want, I think.
Yeah, you don't want Embiid back in
the flow. He's still kind of,
I don't want to play the Sixers at all. I don't want to play them at all. Hey, hold on. Be honest, Brew. It's smart strategy.
No,
it's not. That, it's a horrible strategy. Can I show you?
15 is 17
under Doc Rivers, and this isn't recent. This is pre All Star. So when did they start this plan exactly?
2 weeks ago.
In your mind, okay. Then Doc is executing it perfectly. Yeah. He should change the picture
smiling.
Into a happy one. And you know what he also did? This is just, you know, I don't respect it. No, I don't like it, but I respect it. Bucks host the Celtics tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah.
Either way, he gets to come out and be like, told you.
What do you mean?
Told you. They lost. I told you. Working exactly. Oh, they won. Told you. They can beat anybody.
Wilds, I don't appreciate you implying to the audience that I'm strategically planning out my takes like that. I did a deep dive into the tiebreakers and the standings. Okay. I realized Philly's not going to be able to
pass. What are you rooting for tomorrow night, Bucks Celtics? What do you hope happens?
Oh, he's Celtics are going to win. The Celtics are going to, Philly's going to lose, I mean, Milwaukee's going to lose to Boston and then Orlando and then maybe get it together right before, and it's like, oh man. Well, that was a weird two-week funk Milwaukee.
And you know,
now they need the Pacers.
Not only do they need to avoid Philly, your Heat.
Well, the Heat
culture in the first round.
No, they avoid everyone. Be the eight seed.
Well, they should try to fall. Tomorrow, how is the freshest segment in all of sports, and everybody's happy except LeBron, and the mountain is named after him.
That's probably how he got sick.
Almost there. It's King of the Hill tomorrow, 4:00. First look at Stephon as a Texan's got a brand new helmet. Or the same helmet with different decals. Details emerging from the Buffalo Bills' busy offseason of saying goodbye to talented players. Chris Sims reporting that there was one team that the Bills brass wasn't interested in seeing Stephon suit up for. Take a listen.
And from what I do know, right, is that he was allowed to seek a trade from anybody in the league except the Kansas City Chiefs, Mike. That's what I've been told by multiple people. That he was allowed to do that. Wow. The Chiefs were the only team they weren't going to trade for him.
Missed out.
So listen, at first you want to give the Bills credit. Or you want to cut them slack, I should say. Because I wasn't able, Baseball Reference doesn't track this far enough transactions 100 years ago.
Yeah.
But I imagine it was quite some time after trading Babe Ruth to the Yankees for the Red Sox to do another deal with the Yankees. And we should remember that the Bills made the modern-day Babe Ruth trade when they traded, and we can show you the details of it, Patrick Mahomes to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Modern-day Babe
Ruth. Okay, well, I don't know. You traded away the greatest player ever. At least the Red Sox were able to put on a play. The Bills got nothing out of it. They got in tickets to the Arrowhead Invitational a couple times, and that's it. So initially, you want to cut them some slack for that. But then reality must set in, and you have to recognize this, Brew. The Bills have held on to a belief that their biggest competition is Kansas City, but they're not in the Chiefs' weight class anymore, if they ever were. And instead, they strengthened someone who actually is in their line of sight. The Houston Texans, pretending that they are still competing with the Chiefs, they strengthened a team that is now actually competing with them for the opportunity to lose to the Chiefs. And so if it was, we'll trade you anywhere in the NFC. Right. Again, I think you should just take the best deal available to you. But
even if it came from the Chiefs.
Yes, because especially in this regard. Let me add one other piece to it. The Bills gave up a 5th and a 6th in Stephon Diggs for a 2nd-round pick. They lost cap room. The only reason to do that is because you think he is treacherous in the locker room. A divisive force. Poison. Wouldn't you want to infect the Chiefs with that? Shouldn't that have been, hey, buddy, we'll only send you to Kansas City. Work out the trade. Go ruin their locker room like you ruined ours. None of it makes sense.
No,
you think he's a toxic asset. Listen, you are so awful. We will eat cap dead, the biggest dead cap hit of any non-quarterback ever, and get minimal return 15 months from now to get rid of you. But we won't send you to the team we're trying to beat. Doesn't make sense. Make it make sense, Buffalo.
It's a nice take.
It's the correct take.
It's kind of like your Bucks take. Wow, that's creative that he thought of that. But it's not true. All right, that's the thing.
It is true.
I mean, first of all, Diggs wasn't bad when he first got to Buffalo, right? So they know he won't be bad. If he went to Kansas City, he would be on his best behavior. I think he will in Houston, too. But look, Nick, they did the right thing. And I get it. The Houston take was fake. That's pretty good. But they're like, look, all we got to do is win our division. And then we'll worry about the playoffs, Houston and Cincinnati, these other teams. You cannot send a receiver. And Pittsburgh did it. Deontay Johnson, they wouldn't send him to Kansas City.
What was Pittsburgh? No, was even winning.
Any team in the AFC should not be strengthening the Chiefs. They're looking at the Chiefs and saying, They had one weakness last year. It was wide receiver. They still won the Super Bowl.
The Steelers What are the Chiefs going to be
if they get a receiver like Stephon Diggs? They'll be unbeatable.
But where does the line go? If the story came out that the Patriots were unwilling to trade with the Chiefs, would you consider that delusional?
No, because the Patriots aren't.
Right.
They're in the drive for five.
Well,
but the Bills are going. Bills will still could be likely to be in the playoffs.
Okay.
They're still likely to be in the playoffs, and who knows when they'll meet the Chiefs.
Right, but
you don't want to strengthen the Chiefs.
But instead, you strengthen the team. If you think Stephon Diggs strengthens a team, then you should have fixed the relationship.
I agree.
That's the first take.
Tried.
The second one is this. Are you really, though, in more competition with the Chiefs or with the Texans?
I think that's fair.
Because I think you are in closer competition with the Texans than you are the Chiefs.
There is no way. Patrick Mahomes with a great receiver with this defense, how you beating him?
Well, the problem is...
So ultimately, even if the Texans are a competition, ultimately, you got to get by the Chiefs. And so there's no way. If I'm any team in the AFC that's like, pretty good.
I'm starting to think this is collusion. Because any great NFC team also shouldn't trade with the Chiefs then, right? We got no one we can trade with.
Honestly, if I was any team in the league, I would not be making a trade that's going to make the Chiefs better.
I would not send a great team player to the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Everybody's scared to compete.
Ooh, Patriots.
What about winning the trade? What about making a trade that you get the better end of? How about that? What about swindling somebody?
Live from where?
That eclipse really rocked your world.
Oh my gosh, between that and the earthquake, I'm all shaken up. And the UConn Huskies, Dusty, how you feeling? A little bit rough. It's the second hour. First things first. Today, Bronny declares for the draft. Does this mean LeBron's tenure with the Lakers is coming to a close? Perhaps. Meanwhile, is UConn on upset alert? The answer to that is no, although Dusty and I are betting several boxes of crumble cookies, bro.
Really? Are you serious?
Bruce, so excited.
Wow. But right now, we are 17 days away from the NFL draft, and Nick has another edition of his mock draft, this time listening to my protests that demand, spoiler alert, that the Patriots draft Jaden Daniels at 3. But without further ado, here's 1-32. Take it away.
All right, so this draft involves a pre-draft trade in the mock draft thanks to a pre-draft trade in real life. So the Buffalo Bills traded away Stephon Diggs, which means the Bills at 28 are almost assuredly drafting a wide receiver there. The Lions, sitting at 29, were projected to draft a wide receiver, but now they're like, oh, are we going to have to take wide receiver 6 at 29? Why don't we do this? Trade the 29th pick for T. Higgins.
In
this draft, the Lions trade their first-round pick and then sign T. Higgins to the contract extension he wants. So that, consider that going into this, as the Bengals have
lost
T. Higgins.
What are the Bengals getting?
The 29th pick. They're getting the 29th pick, and then you'll see what they're doing in the draft. All right, first 8 picks of the draft. Wild's correct that Caleb Williams, Drake May, as it was last time. But this time, with Jaden Daniels, Wild's guy going to the New England Patriots. The Cardinals sending it immediately with Marvin Harrison Jr. The Vikings trade up for J.J. McCarthy. More on that in a moment. The Giants get the most talented receiver they have had since Odell Beckham Jr. Shout out to Odell. Good to see him this week. And Joe Alt hit the tackle for Tennessee. That is the most obvious pick of anyone in the draft. And then the Chargers, after trading down from 5, trade back up to number 8. We'll give you the details on those trades right now. So the Vikings trade 11 and 23 for number 5. They'll probably, to be honest, have to give up more than that. I went off the traditional trade value chart. My guess is that that trade would involve some future picks. We don't have to worry about that for here. And then what do the Chargers do? The Chargers lost both of their receivers. They trade from 11, some late round picks as well, to move up. So they get the third of the big three receivers. And the Falcons know they are going to draft defense. They are going to have their pick of almost any defensive player on the board at 8 or 11, so they can move down. Now to 9 through 16. At number 9, the Bears take an edge to along Montez Sweat and Dallas Turner. The Jets in this draft are actually smart.
Oh.
They drafted tackle, one of the youngest players in the draft to learn under Tyron Smith. The Falcons still get their guy, Latu, the edge out of UCLA. And then the big trade. Brock Bowers. The Bengals trade up from 18. Those details in a moment to go get Brock Bowers. The Raiders reunite Antonio Pierce and Michael Penix. The Raiders go get their quarterback. Don't reunite. Pardon me, Michael Penix Jr. The Saints. You heard Ryan Ramczyk's worried. He might not be able to play this year. So all of a sudden, they desperately need a tackle. They get Fuaga. Everybody knows the Colts are taking the corner. They take the number one corner. And the Seahawks get a lineman that can play all five positions in Fatanu. And now we'll give you the details of the Bengals trade. So the Bengals lose T. Higgins. Mm-hmm. So they give up picks 18 and 49 to go get Brock Bowers, what some people consider the best tight end prospect, even better than Kyle Pitts in more than a decade. You re-sign Chase, you get Bowers on a rookie contract, and you don't really lose any juice in your offense. They obviously signed Gesicki. They can maybe go with some heavier sets, but also have Jamar Chase. Now, the latter half of the draft, fewer trades. The Jags get an edge to go along with Trayvon Walker and Jared Verse. The Broncos had traded down with Cincinnati because they wanted Bo Nix, and there was nobody that's going to draft a quarterback between 12 and 18 to take Bo Nix, so they are able to. The Rams do their best to replace the best defensive tackle ever with the best defensive tackle in this draft, Byron Murphy II. The Steelers, after trading away Deontay Johnson, they draft the 6'4 receiver at LSU and Brian Thomas Jr. The Dolphins lost defensive tackle Christian Wilkins. They get Johnny Newton from Illinois. The Eagles desperately need a corner, if you ask me. They get a corner. The Chargers, remember, they have this pick from the earlier trade. They get a guy who's played right tackle at Alabama. Jim Harbaugh saw him up close and personal in the college football playoff. They have their left tackle. Now they have their right tackle. And the Graham Barton's probably a center or a guard. Cowboys need both. Now to the final eight of Mock Draft 2.0. The Packers, safety was their biggest weakness last year. They signed Xavier McKinney, and now they draft the number one safety, turn a weakness into a strength. The Bucs had Devin White alongside Lavonte David as the core of that defense for years. Devin White left. Lavonte David was drafted in 2012. They try to rebuild that part of their team. The Cardinals get the freak athlete out of Iowa, Cooper DeShean. The Bills do get their wide receiver, 6'4", out of Texas, Adonai Mitchell, a transfer from Georgia. Didn't get used that much in Georgia. Was great at Texas last year. The Bengals, having received this pick from the earlier trade for T. Higgins, they get their tackle that they've been looking for. The Ravens get a tackle because they traded away their tackle to the Jets or lost them to the Jets. The Niners get a center, who they desperately need. Bruce, tell me how bad it was. And the Chiefs get a corner to replace LeJarius Sneed. And that is my draft 2.0, ladies and gentlemen.
A lot of action there. All right, let's go back to the top of the draft here. Drake May to Washington. Now, Merrill Hodge
just roasted.
Went on the record and said, you know what? May's tape is going to get a coach fired. So, Brew, are you optimistic or pessimistic on Drake May?
I like Merrill Hodge a lot. And I'm not going to go as far as to say Drake May's not going to be any good, but I would take Jaden Daniels. And I think Nick did this to appease you.
Yeah, thank you.
So he could go to the Patriots. But we know that May has the strong arm, but a lot of people are feeling like he needs to sit a year, a la Jordan Love, but only for one season before he starts. We know that'd be good. I think that's good for most quarterbacks, but I think he may need it more than most. And Jaden Daniels, I mean, we know the athleticism is off the charts. We know that in addition to that, he's got great pocket presence. Like, I know he's got to improve, you know, in his intermediate passing a little bit, but he throws a great deep ball. Mm-hmm. And I just think I think he's what you guys need. You won't get him, but I think he's what Washington needs. I would go with Daniels at two.
And I know we're going to talk more Daniels in a minute. Here's the best argument for Drake May that the people who believe in Drake May keep bringing up, and it seems simplistic, but I think it is a fair one, is what do you think Drake May would look like in college football 2 years from now? Because that's what we saw from Jaden and Penix. Okay. We saw them 2 years older than Drake May is now, with two more years of reps. And so Drake May, not this past season, but the season before, looked awesome. This season had some inconsistencies. Also, last season before this past one, had more weapons. This year, probably the only other North Carolina offensive player that's going to get drafted is Tez Walker, probably in the third or fourth round. But I think because of the age, and the upside there, I would be very surprised if – go ahead.
If Washington doesn't go with
May. Yeah, this is not just to appease Wilds. The appeasing Wilds is that the Patriots draft Jaden, not JJ. I do think it's going to go, as of now, Caleb and then Drake May, but maybe I'll be wrong. I think people like the upside of May.
They had to get Sam Howell out of Washington.
Yes.
Too much of an alpha.
I yeah, you sent us that tweet and read it aloud to the entire office.
I like Sam Howell. Jaden Daniels, finally, back to three for the Patriots. Sleeper team who are on a drive for five wins. Brew, you just talked about how much you like Jaden Daniels, but kind of take your lens and point it at the Patriots. Do you think the Patriots can get to five wins since we're on the drive for five?
That's not the question.
Why? Just switch it up. Relevant. That's relevant is five wins.
He would make them relevant because we'd want to see what Daniels looks like there. Now, and the defense, let's just say the defense is good. Now you got a quarterback who, even though we know he's polished in the pocket in college, but he's going to have some growing pains.
Sure.
But when as he's going through his growing pains, he can make things happen off schedule. Thank he can you. Run. So it would be exciting. We'd all want to tune in and see what Jaden Daniels looks like for the Patriots. So, yes, it would make you guys relevant.
For good and for bad, this just has so many RG3 similarities, which is a guy who, going into his final year of college football, was nowhere near the top of anybody's mock draft, has a monster, you know, last year, wins the Heisman. Jaden obviously doing it with far more weapons than RG3. And RG3 had good receivers that year at Baylor, but also real concerns about his body. And for RG3, listen, maybe it was just the one hit and then, he got left in the game. I don't know. But
Were you an elbow truther?
But no, I don't care about the bursa sack on his elbow. I care about the fact that he weighs 22 pounds more than I do.
But
I
don't
care
you,
about
wouldn't
that.
You, obviously he's a tall guy. You would think he could put on a little bit of weight. And some comps have him like Kyler Murray, but he's 6'4".
Yeah, but Kyler
like, I'd rather
is
you be
thick,
I get that, but I'd rather a guy be taller than and a little bit
can
thin.
Can I say something about guys when people say they can put on weight?
I don't.
Yeah. Then you would have.
Yeah.
He's 20, like he's in his, or like he's 5 years of college football.
I don't think he has his man body yet.
When's it coming?
It's coming soon. It's coming soon.
24, 25.
Okay, couple years in the league.
Chargers at 8, taking Rome Odunze from Washington. College career saw him rack up over 3,000 yards and 24 touchdowns. Brew, do you see him as Herbert's immediately wide receiver?
I actually do. We know how strong the draft is for receivers. Some think he's second. I mean, a couple may be saying even first in this draft as far as a receiver. But I like his size. He runs a 4.4 40, so he's got speed to go with the size. And you look at a lot of the guys, I mean, an A.J. Brown, a Deebo Samuel, he's a strong receiver. So those guys can run after the catch, make something happen. I think he could be that type of guy. And you look in the last several drafts, there's been at least one great receiver, and in many of these drafts, a few really good receivers. So, yeah, if he's at near the top of this draft as a receiver, I believe he's going to come out there and produce.
Oh, listen, I think people have overstated the great wide receivers in this draft being deep. I think that there are a lot of potential wide receiver twos in this draft. I think the late first and the entire second round, you're going to have guys going throughout it, from Ladd McConkey, Purcell from Florida, Xavier Worthy, the guys who I had going late first round. But to me, there are three clear day one wide receiver ones, and they are all going to be top 10 picks. And for the Chargers, they missed on Quentin Johnston flat. Like, they just missed on him. I don't think all of a sudden he's going to be excellent. And so this would be a great kind of help to Justin Herbert and a guy who would be cheap. Yep. And this is a guy Harbaugh, by the way, played against the national championship game. And he's not going to get past the Bears.
You're not giving Harbaugh a lot of recruiting credit here.
Well, I think he's
draft prep credit.
I think
it's like, I saw this guy in the national championship. Let me get him.
Well, I think if you know their problems, then
finally, you
draft, misdraft your own players in the second and third round.
Bengals grabbing Georgia tight end Brock Bowers at 12 after trading T. Higgins. Brew, do you like this plan?
But look, you guys know I've said you don't have to trade T. All right, you could play him this year and go for it. But if he's going to be unhappy, I think he still would play. But if he's going to be unhappy, and obviously you'd lose him for very little if you lose him in after next season. So if you can get Bowers and then you run a lot of 12 personnel, you still got, you know, Jamar on the outside, like, your passing game would still be very strong, presumably. So I don't hate this one. Now, that's getting a late first for T, which some people aren't sure they're going to be able to get that. And with this draft being so deep with receivers, does a team say, hey, I can get a really good receiver, a number two guy for cheaper? So if they can get a late first, then, yeah, I'd do it, but I don't know if they'll be able to.
I think Bowers is the most likely non-quarterback that someone will trade up for.
Oh.
Because I think that there, I've done literally 70 mock drafts. Because it's just, like, just I just enjoy the different machinations of it. And unless the Jets do the impulsive thing and take Bowers at 10, the people that cover the Bears swear they're not going tight end at 9. It's hard to see Bowers going in the top 10, and then you wonder if there's going to be a team that says, we have him rated as the fifth best player in the draft. Right. Can we trade up to, you know what I mean, 11, 12, 13? So if it's not Cincinnati, I think someone will trade up for Brock Bowers.
Okay. Coming up next, Bronny declares for the NBA draft. What does that mean for LeBron next?
That PFF mock draft bot.
Bronny James declaring for the NBA draft, but also keeping his college eligibility as he entered the transfer portal. Made his college debut in December after recovering from a cardiac arrest. On the year, Bronny averaged 5 points, 3 rebounds, and 2 assists. Brew, your reaction.
Well, when I first heard the story, I was like, I was, to be honest, disappointed, a bit sad, because I was like, he's not ready. Obviously, you just gave his numbers, and the team wasn't even that good. But then when you look at what they want to do, have him go work out for NBA teams, interview with NBA teams, and obviously not only has LeBron got his back, but Rich Paul's arguably the most powerful agent in the game. So they want to find if a team has a program for Bronny. And I know that sounds like program, we got 15 players. No, a program for Bronny where you're going to help him develop into, or at least try to develop into, an NBA player. I think LeBron and Rich Paul's view is his best chance of growing into an NBA player is to work with an NBA team during practice, et cetera, rather than playing with a college team. Okay. And so I think that's a good plan. And if a team is willing to do it, then he gets drafted. If not, then he can go back and play in college. I think the Lakers are going to draft him. I think they clearly want to keep LeBron. I think the Lakers will draft him. Yeah. They got a second-round pick. Can they, from the Clippers, will he be there? I assume so. So I think the Lakers will draft.
So here, listen, people can argue about the fairness or righteousness of this, but there is another element to it as well, which is there is, and I've described this before, but I don't know if I've ever described it exactly right. If there is a belief that LeBron James Jr., that Bronny could be a legitimate NBA player 3 years from now, but the only way that he would be that is if there is a legitimate NBA program and investment in his development. All right. Then LeBron, using the levers of power to try to get a team to be invested in his kid, is quite simply how businesses across America have operated in dozens of fields forever.
And including professional sports.
Including look at the professional nepotism sports, throughout the professional right. sports. Especially in front offices or coaching staff.
Absolutely.
But by the way, J.R. Smith had enough power to get Chris on an NBA team. And I think Giannis's whole family gets to try.
Right.
And I think one of the reasons Seth Curry got as long a leash as he did to where he then became an excellent player was because people wanted to do right by Steph. And so here, the Lakers thing is interesting. But here's the question I've asked for and I'll ask again. Because LeBron is a potential free agent this offseason. Would it be smart for the New York Knicks, for instance, to trade the 25th pick of the draft, a first-round pick, if that's where they ended up being, for LeBron James? I would say yes. I would say LeBron James, even in year 22 at age 40, is worth a late first-round pick if it were a one-for-one trade.
100%.
Yes, and so my point is, Brew, would a team then say, if Bron says, I'll sign with you, if you have the 25th pick of the draft, if you draft Bronny, I will sign with you.
I'm gonna give you a few teams ahead of the Knicks because that makes some sense. I don't know that LeBron going there, and you could even get a trade. They probably send Julius Randle.
You wouldn't have to. He's a free agent.
But if you want, sign and trade, whatever. But look, if Milwaukee goes out in the first round, why not try to get LeBron?
I don't know if they
– Now, would he take the minimum?
Sure. Right.
But Philadelphia, if they don't go deep.
So that's a great –
LeBron in Philadelphia, and they got the money to actually pay him the max. Yeah. We talked about Paul George going there. I'd rather have LeBron.
So if they
– with that group?
Like, is that not
– You don't like that?
You don't
– No, I think what you said makes a lot of sense, but I'd be lying if I told you it didn't leave a sour taste in my mouth.
Well, I mean, I'm not trying to be like listen.
Tell us why.
I want to live in
the nepotism?
Well, I want to – I get it. Live in the real world, Thanasis is on the team, and there's value to that that goes beyond the stat sheet. But I wonder where the line is of like, yeah, he's here to develop. It's like, all right, hey, can he get some run against –
Well, that's a decent.
So now all of a sudden it's like, oh, he's getting. We're like doing developmental stuff.
No,
that's
the
a good point
year.
In that if LeBron can get a team to draft him, can he get a team to play him when he isn't ready to play?
Well, but
and that's where you could call.
I don't know.
But if you
don't,
right? No, I get that. But I think you could. He could even be in the G League, like the Lakers' first round pick right now. You know what I mean?
Spend time in the G League. Okay, is that part of the
and
plan?
And so I think it is. And again, this comes from someone who I host my podcast with my son. And so, like, I understand the idea of, like, hey, I have a bit of juice here and I want to use it to, you know what I mean, to help my family out.
Here's
like,
the one difference, though. And you're right. It happens all the time in corporate America in the front office. The difference is they're not seeing – we would be seeing Bronny play a lot, you know, eventually. And he would be scrutinized.
That's true.
By people all over the world. If he's not ready, that's the difference in corporate America.
I bet he comes back to being on the court. Play for somebody.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
I think an NBA team will put that plan together.
You do?
I agree.
I wonder if the plan is better than a plan that UFL medals time.
Yep.
Go ahead. This was my favorite, but you have
Great
three
catch.
Other ones.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just excited for the UFL
medals. I'm sorry. This is the greatest one-handed catch. They're already saying catch of the year.
Well,
I was
in the league.
It's early in the year, but I think it is the catch of the year. Former second-round pick for the Dallas Cowboys, Taco Charlton, hat-trick of sacks, and a win over the Panthers. Shout-out Taco. He gets the bronze. Silver medal, Marcel Aitman. Four catches, two touchdowns, 114 yards, and a win over the Renegades. Heard the Bills might have called him shortly after the game. Can't confirm. Gold medal for the Brahmas. Chase Garber's former NFL quarterback, 29 of 40, three touchdowns. This win included 4th and 12 instead of the onside kick. Go for it. Pick it up. Touchdown drive in the final 48 seconds for the Brahmas. There is the podium from this weekend in the UFL. Sorry for stepping on you, Wilds.
No, it's okay. Purdue, UConn tonight. Crumble cookies on the line. Dusty. I have an announcement to make. If UConn wins, I will bring celebratory crumble cookies. And if UConn loses, I will also bring crumble cookies and claim them from Dusty.
So Brew can't lose.
I'm good.
So who are you rooting for, Brew? Crumble cookies night.
Oh, gosh. That's a good – I pick UConn. That was my – I got to be honest. I wouldn't mind seeing the upset. Dusty was so melancholy today. I'd like to see Dusty smile, so I want Purdue.
He's so mad. He's out there just heckling us. I was going to ask Dusty to come on so everyone could see his gorgeous Purdue sweater.
Dusty, you want to come on?
I realized it was against union regulations.
Come on, Dust.
Purdue wins.
UConn wins by 12.
UConn wins by 12. You've been right about it the whole time?
For 2 years.
Zach Edey with a 38-18.
Speak up next.